Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hello, and welcome to the Milestone Pursuit podcast. Today we've got a little recovery ramble, a bit of a jog around Epping Forest, and a bit of a natter. It is Sunday, the 11th of July. It's around about 2:30. The European Championship final has not taken place, but it is going to be the subject of the ramble today. And really, this run in itself is a little bit of a distraction, a holding pattern. This 8 o'clock kickoff has taken forever to arrive. I feel for the people who've got a bit overexcited. And they probably hit the pub early and won't remember much of the game. But anyway, it's the second distraction for me today. I've already had Loughton under 11's cricket team take a second last ball thriller victory against Upminster, with my eldest boy scoring slightly less runs than he conceded off his bowling. But it was his first game of hard ball cricket, so that's an exciting day, exciting morning for him. And another distraction this afternoon right now is that Djokovic is going for his 20th Grand Slam at Wimbledon. There's so much going on. And then we got the football later. And as I said, I'm going to be talking about that. There's going to be loads of stuff. There's already been loads of stuff about Southgate and how he's created a winning formula, what it's doing for the nation. Loads of it. And there'll be even more of it in the months and years to come, particularly if England win tonight. So what I'm offering here is my own perspectives, both as a fan and as a coach, and a coach in endurance sport, but also as a coach in business. So just thinking about some of those things, and thinking about some of the things we're witnessing and how to apply them in other places in our life. None of it will be unique, and some of it you may well disagree with, and that's fine, that's all part of it. So there's my caveats out of the way. I'm a fan, I'm a coach, it's a personal perspective. That you may well disagree with. And it's interesting actually, because just a few weeks ago I had my own little football final. The East End Lions under 8s. Of which I'm the manager, played in their little cup final 3 or 4 weeks ago now, beginning of June, end of June, and I said to them before the game, really clear message, or at least I tried to make it clear, that I was really proud of everything they'd achieved all season. They've been brilliant, learned loads, come on as little people, come on as footballers, really good bunch to work with, hang out with, slightly nuts at times. And I was really clear that that didn't change. If they won or they lost, I would be equally proud of them, and all I asked was that they try their best. And so they did. Oh my god, did they try their best. A yo-yo game, 2-1 up, 3-2 down, 4-2 down, got a goal back, and I gave it everything to get an equaliser, and it didn't quite come off for them. And at the end of the 4-3 defeat, where they've given it everything and they've been cheering each other on and supporting one another, they handled the defeat really well. I think only one player in tears, and the rest were all proud of what they put in and what they'd done. Well, they all were, but I was upset. Not to the point of being tearful, although nearly. But it wasn't because they lost. Because especially now, a few weeks back, it doesn't bother me at all. But it was because I felt that their effort, their energy, their spirit, their support for one another, what they were giving to their parents, I felt they deserved a happy ending. And for them, I guess it was. They were quite happy with their medal. They even got a runners-up trophy. And they got the glory of their parents being super happy. Because there's nothing better as a parent, is there, than seeing your children try really hard at something. But I felt that their, as I say, their endeavour, their quality, it deserved a happy ending. And that is exactly how I feel about the England team. I feel that the monkey's off the back. This is my own personal feelings now. I think the monkey's off the back. The semi-final, the defeats. The defeats have gone. When you look back, you know, my own England supporting career, it's funny, I say this to my children, 9 and 8, that at my age, or sorry, at their age, in my life, England had failed to qualify for 2 World Cups and finished rather dismally in 1 European Championships. So my first positive experience of watching England was 1982, Brian Robson scoring after 27 seconds in the first match against France. But then, since then, there's been varying degrees of hope, expectation and pain that we've all suffered, if in England, an England football fan. 86, the hand of God, although we nearly got knocked out in the group stage. 1990, losing on penalties, Chris Waddle hitting the inside of the post, not in his penalty but in normal time, so close. The great Sir Bobby Robson, Gazza's tears. Then 1996, it's coming home. Oh no, it isn't. The Germans win again. Through to 98, the amazing Michael Owen goal against Argentina in the World Cup in France. And then that horrible period of experimentation with a good quality set of players, but managers who didn't really care about the long term, didn't really care about pushing England forward. Capello, Sven-Goran Eriksson. Really disappointing years up until 2016, when Sir Gareth of Southgate stepped up to the plate. Began to change everything. And this group are different, and this is the stuff that you have read loads about. But the reality is, I simplify it down to 3 really strong components as to why it would be fantastic if it was rewarded with ultimate success. And that is, these players are really good. They are very highly skilled, very technically proficient, a cut above anything we've had before, certainly in terms of depth of talent, but they're also a fantastic team that comes together, fights for one another, puts the team first, and that's a point we'll come back to later. But there's another dimension. So the three dimensions is they're really good at football, they're a really good team, and they're really good role models. And that last point is significant, and I think why I'd really like to see them win tonight. And the interesting thing is, like I say, the monkeys off the back of the semi-final defeats of the last World Cup, 1996, 1990, things that I remember hitting me quite hard as a football fan. But now we're in a final. It feels to me like pressure's off. They can go and play. They've broken that semi-final losing habit and can now go and play. And, you know, obviously everyone's saying things like, we want to win it for the country. The country's had a tough time, well, so is Italy. So I'd like them to win it for themselves. I'd like them to win it for their own personal intrinsic value. And there'll be loads of value outside of that, though. Endorsements, and obviously their salaries will bump up. They'll all have to visit the Queen for some honours. There's going to be loads of personal glory, but I'd like them to win for intrinsic glory, because they are good footballers, they are a good team, and they are excellent role models. Or certainly they have been excellent role models in the recent past. I say that as a caveat in case someone punches someone tonight and gets sent off and we lose and it all goes horribly wrong. Because that could happen, of course. Can't see it happening though, can you? But let's not forget the community aspect of all of this. And that's another thing that's been well written about and will be even more so as time passes. Again, especially if they win. But it's this sense of collective effervescence where we're all united with energy around something that's positive, that's bringing our society together in a way that not many things can. So the 2012 Olympics will probably be the only thing I can think of that comes close to it from a positive bringing together of society that I can think of. And even that, it's probably not as powerful as a working class sport like football. And that term, collective effervescence, I haven't just made it up. It comes from a French sociologist, Emile Durkheim. Probably not how you say it. And it's all about how you unite to a greater humanity that transcends yourself through a single event or a combined experience. And it's only combined experiences of scale that can achieve it. And that's what's going on. So when people are out tonight honking their horns down your high street, people are waving their England flags out of their cars. It's not louts, it's collective effervescence. And what's particularly interesting about it is there's science around, which I'm not going to go into now, science around how these sorts of occasions provide collective healing from great trauma. The great trauma obviously being the pandemic. And if nothing else, it has given us something else to all talk about. How long has the pandemic been the only source of conversation? Of course, don't forget that we're talking this good game of how, you know, we are bringing ourselves together and how our players are role models, how our nation needs it. Just climbing a fence. Little gate in my way. I'm over it now. On we go. Yeah, the Italians have had it too. It's not unique to us. They will be experiencing the same thing. And have just as much right to claim victory on that basis as England do. We are not entitled to the victory. So, where I wanted to go next, that's my own feelings, a little bit about how these things have played out. Where I want to go next is around leadership. And leadership in two dimensions. It's the what and then the how. And in this instance, they're both particularly important. So just starting with the what. About the what. What's been really clear, probably since 2018, but and the World Cup in Russia, where England got knocked out in the semi-finals, but probably since before then, since 2016, when and 2014, when we were abjectly dumped out of the World Cup in Brazil and then the European Championships in 2016. There's a sense that lessons were learned and a vision was put into place, and a vision that had purpose behind it. And I think in sport it's quite easy to set visions. Vision being, you know, where you're heading, what you want to have achieved, what you want to stand for, how you want to stand out. And in sport, it can often be about winning. And there's no doubt that they set themselves a goal of winning a major tournament. No doubt. But I don't think it's just that. I think it was investing in grassroots football, investing and having a structure through the national teams that layered up into a greater whole. So a philosophy through the senior team, through to the under 21 team, under 20 team, under 18 team, under 15 teams. Creating commonality amongst all those players. And, you know, bear in mind that there's a few members of the current squad who've been through that system. Jude Bellingham is 18. He was obviously 13 when England were knocked out in the semi-final of the World Cup 5 years ago. And he's been through that journey and understands it. So that when the senior team get together, as opposed to the past when it's an aggregation of club players who perhaps didn't even know each other or didn't get on with one another, trying to work to a completely different system and way of working. It's not like that. They come together and they know what the score is. So it's taking time to set that vision, but also to set it in more than one dimension. And then, so if, you know, to win a tournament, to invest in the grassroots and create a structure for grassroots that mirrors what happens at the elite level. They also had engaging the public. People had fallen out of love with the England football team. Journalists certainly had. So re-engaging with their public was clearly a big feature of that vision. So there are your what's. And they're all, you know, hypotheses. I don't know that those are exactly what they set in their documents, in their PowerPoint presentations. But it looks likely that those were key elements of it. So that's the what, but the how is so important. And it's become increasingly important in sport because I think of the focus historically on win at all costs. Not just in all sports, and in British sport, funding determined by the medals that you win, or you might win, rather than impact on society. Impact on physical and mental health. And what that breeds, as I say, is a win at all cost mentality where you end up with cultures like we saw in British cycling and in British gymnastics and probably in other sports as well. So the how becomes really important. And in this instance, in football, it's about the culture that they bring. And I'm going to talk about five things that I think is going on inside the England squad that you see from afar, based on things that people have said and things you can see with your own eyes. And those five things are: empowerment, creating systems, being decisive but flexible, empathetic, and knowing when to peak. They're my five little headlines, if you will. And I'm now going to go through each of those five, but I'm going to do so by thinking about how they apply to running and how they apply to coaching and how they apply to coaching in endurance sport and also coaching in business. And there's probably loads of other things in here that you'll have read about or will feature in the coming weeks and months. But as I said at the beginning, this is my take on it as it stands right now. As there's no particular order to these five things, but I will start with empowerment. And what is really clear is the England management, starting with Gareth Southgate, give the players room, they give them opportunity to express themselves on and off the pitch. One of the things you never see is an image of Gareth Southgate barking instructions at someone. There'll be some gentle arm waving, but you never see that side of a manager that's telling people what to do all the time on the pitch. And then off the pitch, they are clearly encouraged to have a voice as well. From Raheem Sterling and Black Lives Matter to Marcus Rashford and Meals for School Children to Jude Bellingham sending messages to Emma Raducanu, the teenage tennis player who featured heavily at Wimbledon this week. It's all confident voices from very young men who are obviously allowed to have a voice. And so I imagine on the training ground, in the changing rooms, in the canteens, their perspectives are all listened to. And that's also what good coaching is. Good coaching is empowering people. You can't make decisions for people as a coach in any context, and you certainly can't perform for people. So you have to empower them. Give them choices, make their own choices clear. Often it's about that, it's about being an ear to understanding the consequences of their choices. If I run this 5K tomorrow, will it compromise my marathon in 3 months' time? Well, it might. Depending on how you recover, where it fits into your training, how do we manipulate your training around it? And then, what's more important, the marathon or the 5K? Players, as very young men, have a lot of autonomy. And again, in coaching, it's interesting because the textbooks around coaching will say that, you know, there's a spectrum of the way you deal with people, from managing someone, which is when you tell them what to do, through to or counselling and beyond, where people go on a journey of self-discovery. And coaching will sit somewhere in the middle of all of that. Where the role is to help people to discover their own potential. And what I describe performance coaching as, helping people be the best they can be, using high degrees of self-awareness as fuel. So really interesting to see how the approach to coaching in the England setup is managed. because clearly they're not telling them how to kick a football. Obviously there's lots of tactics involved, but the skill set is there. It's about facilitating a high performance level. Okay, so that's empowerment. Next, we are going into systems. And this sounds very AI, artificial intelligence, computer oriented, but it's not. It's about being systematic, and there clearly is a systemized approach to the way that they are working, which is best exemplified through the team formation. The shape of the team on the pitch. They've got some clear philosophies. And players that either fit into that philosophy or who are pivotal to that philosophy. But the key thing is everybody knows what that system is. Harry Kane up top, coming deep to collect the ball, drawing defenders forwards to create space behind for the quick boys, Sterling and whoever he chooses on the other flank to get behind. The fullback's doing a certain job, two midfielders in front of the defenders doing a certain job, and everybody knows the system and can fit into it when asked to. And that's one of the beauties of this team, is that, or this squad, is they've got so much depth. It almost doesn't matter what team he picks. If it doesn't work, he can just, someone has a bad day or gets injured, just swap them out and put someone else on. Works a treat. But it is flexible, so things change in the course of a football match. And as a consequence of that, you might change the shape, change the formation, certainly change the personnel. And he does that from one match to another as well. Thank you. Also, what sits inside this system approach, where you know where you're at any one time, it's not random, the people in it know what's going on, which is a good system to have, because everybody likes to feel comfortable, everyone likes to belong. What systems do you have in place for your running? What systems do you have in place in your work life? And I'm sure there are systems that sit behind the scenes at England, as well as the team formation and the way they play. And part of that, what that produces, sorry, is a focus on process rather than outcome. So if we know the system, we believe it works, we will stick to that process, focus on the process, and the outcomes will take care of themselves. And the England cricket team did something exactly the same from their transformation from 2015 to 2019 World Cups. We'll have a system, we'll have a way of playing, we'll bring people in who suit that system, be flexible with the system when needs be, but we'll focus on process and let the results take care of themselves. And you really get that sense with England, that particularly against Denmark, 1-0 down, even 1-1. There's no rush, there's no panic. Teams of the past would have been bringing on a big centre forward and hitting long balls up from the back that they'd never practiced before. Out of desperation, the England stay calm, stuck to the plan, and the process eventually delivered. And I love that because it plays to two of the values of the marathon pursuit, patience and discipline. So patience to play the long game, to wait and not to force things, and then discipline to not panic when things start going wrong, and to stay calm when things are going right, and stay in the moment, not getting ahead of yourselves. You heard them all say, we've done well, we've won that game, but the next game's coming up, and that's what we're focusing on. It's all about the process. And of course, in this systemized section, there is also stuff about team over self, the collective over the individual. There are all number of different players who could have played in all sorts of different positions. Everyone's had their point of view on it. But it looks to me like all the players are thinking not about how many minutes they get on the pitch, or whether they're getting the glory on the pitch. It's about an investment in the team, in the squad, in the vision, and in the how above the individual, because they all know they're going to benefit, they will all benefit. And there's no better example of that than watching Jordan Henderson, who, had he not been injured leading up to the tournament, would definitely be in the starting team. He seems very happy to be playing a small part as a substitute, and doubtlessly a massive part on the training ground, in the hotel. A really positive influence as a slightly senior member of a young squad. Which brings me back to a comment that Roy Keane made. I'm not a fan of Roy Keane, but he said that, I remember him saying before the tournament started, that if Jordan Henderson's not fit, he shouldn't be in the squad. But they say, his brilliant quote was something like this. He said, why do you have a player in the squad who can't play because they're injured? And they say that he brings something to the team. He's good to have around the place. What does he do? Does he put on a show for everyone every night? Something like that. Well, I would suggest it's a bit more than that. And I suggest that's why Roy Keane didn't make a very good leader off the pitch. Okay. So, have a systemised approach. Everybody understands. The third thing I wanted to talk about was decisiveness. Now, some people say Gareth Southgate's a lovely bloke. One of my friends says he's massively out of his depth. Well, that might be true tactically, but he definitely makes decisions, switches team players in and out. Probably finds it really hard, but he does it. He even subbed a sub, and I think that's a brilliant demonstration of flexible leadership, or decisive and flexible leadership. Jack Grealish came on for the last, I don't know, 25 minutes or something of the Denmark game. Once we got a goal and we're winning, we needed to do something different. And so we took him off again. Never happens. And it's always been hideously embarrassing for the person who has, because it's basically saying that you're my second best option because you're not on the starting team. I'm going to bring you on now, but you didn't do a good enough job, so I'm taking you off again and bringing someone else on, so now you're my third best option. And in a sport like football, driven by ego, masculine ego, that's really a really hard thing to take. But that must have been reframed. You did your job, you did half an hour and you did a job. And it's team, not self. So this is what we're going to do. And I think that's brilliant. Use people for what they're good at doing, where they fit in, and espouse the team over the self. And do so decisively. Brilliant leadership. And for me, the reason that's brilliant leadership is England teams have been criticised in the past for sticking to a plan, only having one plan, not being adaptable and flexible when things don't go wrong or when things go right, and failing as a result. And obviously a lot of the leadership speak these days is about how you learn from failure, how you learn from mistakes, and how you adapt. And that goes back to my beliefs around goal setting. Is that particularly in business, we're very good at setting goals at the beginning of a year and then running off to deliver them with lots of energy before getting to mid-year. Things have changed. Maybe a pandemic has hit. And all of a sudden, those goals are irrelevant, but nobody's bothered to look back at them and adapt and change them. Think about things in a slightly different way. So adapting to the external environment is critical, and it's also true in endurance sport. And how many times have we been prepared for a race only for the weather to take a turn for either the better or the worse on the day? You have to be adaptable in mindset, but also change strategy, either run slower or have a heat or cold based strategy for your race. There's definitely no good just cracking on as if nothing's changed. Okay, let's move on to our fourth area. So that was decisiveness and flexibility. This is empathy, empathetic leadership. And there's so much written about this, I'm not going to overdwell on it. But from the responses and the attitudes toward Black Lives Matter, taking of the knee, there is plenty of examples where the squad, led by the manager, have shown empathy. The handing of a Christian Eriksen shirt to Denmark before the game on whenever it was, Wednesday. Empathy for their feelings, what they've been through the Christian Eriksen scare. And with that empathy, what comes, assuming it's authentic, what comes is forgiving mistakes. And in football, mistakes happen all the time. People give the ball away, a rash kick, a foul, a shot instead of a cross. Happens all the time. And you have to forgive those mistakes to create a cohesive team unit. And to create that sense of empowerment I was talking about earlier, where people are comfortable making their own decisions. Because they know they're not going to get blamed overtly if those decisions don't work out. And then within that is the best part of the story of all. Which is the redemption of Gareth Southgate himself. Missing a penalty in Euro 96, leading to a German victory. Something that it took him varying amounts of time based on what he read recently to get over and forgive himself on. And it's been interesting because when it's been put to him about that, particularly during the tournament, he must feel like redemption, particularly when we beat Germany. He goes, no, not really. So I can't change the past. What I can do is change the way people feel about the past or the present. And that starts with changing the way he feels about himself. And interestingly, the same is true on the Italian side. So Roberto Mancini, the Italian manager, has been saying things like, he never made it to a World Cup as a player for various reasons, some discipline related. And this is his opportunity at redemption. There's more poetry or more symmetry in the England-Italy. And the England-Italy matchup. And forgiving yourself is something I talk a lot about with people in business and with athletes. People can be terribly hard on themselves. And of course, sometimes that's appropriate if there's been mistakes you've made, conscious choices you've made that have led to poor performance and choices that you knew would, but you perhaps thought they wouldn't for whatever reason. But it serves no purpose at all to accept those choices you made, forgive yourself for making them, understand the reasons why to avoid making them in the future and move on. And I think it's critical in both running and business. And a lot of that is about recognising the mistake in the first place, or where at least understanding where things went wrong and having some self-awareness around that. But then, and then that is how you can forgive yourself. And I often talk about Nelson Mandela in these recordings, but one of the things that I really liked about some of his language was recognising his own imperfections, particularly around the relationships he had with his family, specifically his wives, and things he might have done And he goes, well, I'm not perfect, but I've learned to forgive myself, and it's through learning to forgive myself that I'm able to forgive others. And of course, that was fundamental to the forgiving of the white South Africans. It was fundamental to the healing process, which, to be fair, is obviously still ongoing. It was fundamental to that process in South Africa in the 90s. Oh, we're going deep, aren't we? Let's move on. So empathy, really important characteristic. The last thing I want to say on that is something I think I've said before, which is that it is the thing that's most powerful about the empathetic leadership being shown by Gareth Southgate in particular, but also the players, is that the arena in which they are showing it in, which is football, which is typically lacked empathy. Leaders are bullish, boorish, sometimes bullies, often bullies, very male, very alpha, very egocentric. And now we've got something completely different. And that's why it's so good. A man in football displaying empathetic leadership. If it can be done there, it can be done anywhere. And look at the results. So the last point I want to make about leadership is knowing how to peak and when to peak. The beginning of the tournament, England did an effective job against Croatia to win 1-0, but nobody was singing from the rooftops about it's coming home. Not an amazing performance, a solid one. Then followed the 0-0 draw against Scotland. Graham Souness, a Scottish pundit, saying, oh, football ain't coming home with that lot. Scotland triumphant for their moment in the sun. But who wants to peak then? Do the job in the group stages, get through the group. You don't need peaking in game one or game two out of potentially seven. You're going to be peaking by game six, game seven. Now, it's arguable that England peaked at game five against Ukraine. But maybe they'll properly peak tonight. Who knows? And the same applies in business and in running. When are you going to save yourself for your very best performances? How are you going to build up to your very best performances? You cannot do it day in, day out. It takes time. And it takes energy management. So when are you going to back off? When are you going to go hard? When are you going to be at your best? And how do you be at your best? Think about the conditions in which you perform at your best. Another key feature of coaching people. And let's hope that the Euro 2020 final in 2021, in front of 60,000 fans at Wembley on a Sunday night in July, is England's peak moment. It may not be, they might have gone past their peak. Maybe Italy have too. Yeah. We'll find out soon enough. And you'll probably have known from the very beginning. So, that draws it to an end. I've enjoyed this jog around the forest and chat about football and leadership and all sorts of interesting stuff. I've been away with it. Remember, these are just my thoughts. disagree with them as you will. That's what it's all about. But there's no doubt that it's the football and what's going on, the collective effervescence, is both exciting and fascinating. And there's loads for us all to learn in what's playing out right in front of our very eyes. There's a vision, there's purpose, there's a what, and there's a real focus on how, through empowerment, being systematic, being decisive but flexible, being empathetic and peaking when it matters. Brilliant. Thanks very much. Thanks for joining me. Thanks for distracting me for this longer than expected ramble on this Sunday afternoon. And I look forward to the match. I hope you enjoy it as well. And I'll speak to you again soon. Take care.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.